Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we really get into some cool stuff. And today it's all about perioperative nursing.
Oh, yeah.
We are going to scrub in
We are.
and explore everything about the surgical journey
Absolutely.
from that moment where you're like, are we really doing this?
Right.
To that feeling of we survived.
Yes. Definitely more than just what happens in the OR.
Okay, so full disclosure.
Okay.
My surgery knowledge is basically limited to what I've seen on like Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, okay.
So before we even get the scalpels,
Yeah.
can we just break down what perioperative actually means?
Sure.
Because it sounds a little intimidating.
It sounds more complicated than it is.
Yeah.
It just means the whole surgical experience, like from beginning to end,
Okay.
before, during, and after.
Got it.
It's about the patient's well-being through all those stages.
Okay.
So, like a relay race,
Okay.
every phase has its own specialized team.
So it's like a well-coordinated dance then,
Yes.
with each phase sort of flowing into the next. And the nurses are like the choreographers.
That's a great way to put it.
Right.
They're the backbone,
Okay.
making sure everything runs smoothly.
Yeah.
So the perioperative period starts when the decision for surgery is made.
Okay.
That's the preoperative phase.
Got it.
That's where assessments happen, tests are ordered,
Okay.
you're prepped for the big day physically and emotionally.
That's where I can already see how crucial the nurses are.
Oh, absolutely.
Like they're the stage managers getting everything ready for the main act.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
So then comes the intraoperative phase. That's when we're actually in the OR.
Okay.
That's where the surgical team, they take center stage.
Right.
But the nurses are still vital there.
Okay.
They're monitoring vitals, assisting the surgeon, making sure that everything just runs smoothly.
Talk about a high-pressure situation.
Oh, it
They
is.
must need nerves of steel.
Absolutely demands specialized skills and definitely a calm demeanor.
Okay, so then last but not least, we have the postoperative phase,
Yes.
which starts when the patient is transferred to recovery.
Exactly.
So this phase is all about monitoring the recovery, managing pain, and
Yes.
helping that person regain strength and independence.
That's right.
So that's where the real healing begins.
It is.
But hold on, I read that the postoperative phase like has subphases.
It does.
It's like a play within a play.
Exactly, three
Three
subphases.
subphases within a phase.
Yes.
This is where it gets really interesting.
It does. It does.
Okay, so tell me more.
Think of it like levels in a video game.
Okay.
You have to conquer each level to get to the final boss, which is full recovery.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are the levels?
So phase, you're in the PCU, that's the post anesthesia care unit.
Okay.
Lots of monitoring, airway management, pain control, the works.
Got it.
Then phase two is all about preparing for self-care at home.
Okay.
So things like wound care, medications, all that good stuff.
So getting ready to be discharged.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then phase three is for people who need extended care,
Okay.
like rehab services or anything to really get back to 100%.
Wow. So that's super comprehensive.
It
It's
is.
actually really reassuring to know that there's such a structured approach
Absolutely.
to this whole thing
Yeah.
every step of the way.
Yeah. Every step is designed for safety and the best outcome.
Okay, so now I know not all surgeries are created equal.
Right.
Some are super quick and simple, and others are major life events.
Right.
So can you kind of shed some light on how those surgical procedures are classified?
One way to classify them is by urgency, how quickly they need to happen.
Okay.
So elective surgery that's planned in advance,
Okay.
like tonsillectomy, hernia repair, even cosmetic procedures.
Okay. So the we can get this done when we get this done kind of surgery.
Exactly when you can fit it in.
Yeah.
Then we have urgent surgeries. Those need to be done in 24 to 48 hours,
Okay.
like removing a gallbladder or a tumor.
So serious, but not like immediately life-threatening.
Right. And then lastly, we have emergency surgery,
Okay.
which is like drop everything. We got to do this right now.
Like the trauma situations.
Yes, trauma hemorrhage, perforated ulcer.
So timing is key.
Yes, very key.
But there are other ways to classify surgeries too, right?
There are.
Like some are just riskier than others.
Right, so we can classify them by risk major versus minor.
Okay.
Major surgeries, those often involve vital organs. They have higher risk of complications,
Okay.
might need a longer hospital stay.
Okay.
So think like a carotid endarterectomy, removing plaque from a major artery in your neck.
That's serious.
Yeah, definitely major
And
leaguered.
so minor surgery would be more like getting a wisdom tooth pulled.
Exactly.
Okay.
Minor surgery is usually less invasive, lower risk, often can be done outpatient.
Same day.
Same day, go home.
Nice.
So now here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
We can classify them by purpose.
Okay.
So you can have a surgery that's diagnostic, like a biopsy to figure out if a lump is cancerous. Or they can be curative, aiming to remove or fix a problem completely.
Okay.
And we even have preventative surgeries,
like
removing a mole that could turn cancerous.
Wow, so many possibilities.
There are a lot.
It's like a whole menu of surgeries.
It is. There's a surgery for almost every scenario.
That's incredible what they can do.
It is.
It's like they have a magic wand for almost every problem.
It's really remarkable.
Yeah.
And it's all made possible by the whole team, including those perioperative nurses.
Right. From beginning to end.
The whole way.
Speaking of crucial roles.
Yes.
What about anesthesia?
Okay.
I mean, that's one of the big mysteries for people going into surgery.
It is.
How does it work?
It's essentially the science of making you comfortable and safe during surgery.
Okay.
So it involves inducing a controlled state where you don't feel pain, your muscles are relaxed, you might even be completely unconscious.
So it's like hitting the pause button on your senses.
Yeah, you could say that.
Sign me up.
It's more like a volume control, really. Anesthesia works by interrupting nerve signals to your brain.
Okay.
That's how it prevents you from experiencing pain and other sensations.
So are there different types of anesthesia?
Absolutely.
Like what?
So the type used depends on the procedure and your individual needs.
Okay.
The most common that people think of is general anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
You're completely unconscious, not aware of anything happening.
Okay.
Then we have moderate sedation analgesia.
Okay.
Sometimes called conscious sedation.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that.
So you're awake, you're responsive, but you're super relaxed and pain-free.
So you're kind of there, but not really there.
Yeah. Kind of a twilight zone.
Sounds trippy.
It can be. And then there's regional anesthesia that numbs a specific area.
What?
So that could be a nerve block where we inject anesthesia around a specific nerve or spinal or epidural anesthesia, which is delivered into the space around your spinal cord.
So you're awake but numb in that specific area.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
It is pretty cool. So that's often used for surgeries on limbs, lower abdomen, or childbirth.
Wow.
And then let's not forget about topical anesthesia.
Okay.
That's what you get at the dentist.
Fine.
Applied directly to the skin or mucous membranes.
Got it.
Used for minor procedures or pain relief on superficial wounds.
Okay, so there's a whole spectrum of options when it comes to anesthesia.
There is.
Before we get to the actual surgery, though, can we talk about the paperwork involved?
Of course.
Is it more than just signing on the dotted line?
It is. It's about informed consent.
Okay.
It's super important, and it's not just a formality.
Okay.
It's about making sure that you, the patient, understand everything involved.
Yeah.
So it explains the risks and benefits, alternative options, and your right to refuse treatment.
So it's empowering the patient.
Absolutely. It's giving you the power to make informed decisions about your healthcare.
It's like a two-way street, then.
It is a conversation, a partnership between you and your healthcare team.
Got it. And while we're talking about planning ahead, what about advanced directives?
That's a good point.
Especially in the context of surgery.
Especially in the context of surgery.
Because I always thought of those as being more like, you know, a living will.
Right.
Do I really need to think about that before surgery?
They're all about making sure your healthcare wishes are honored if you become unable to communicate.
Okay.
Which can definitely be relevant in some post-operative situations.
Okay.
It's like having a backup plan, just in case.
So it's about peace of mind, really.
It is peace of mind and making sure your voice is heard, even if you can't speak for yourself.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, I've noticed that more and more surgeries are being done on an outpatient basis.
They are.
Why is that?
Well, outpatient surgery or same-day surgery is becoming more common because it has tons of benefits for patients.
Okay.
First of all, shorter hospital stay.
Always a plus.
Right. Who wants to be in the hospital?
Not me.
Less stress, faster recovery. You're in the comfort of your own home.
Okay, so it's all about minimizing that hospital time. But doesn't that put more responsibility on the patient to kind of manage their recovery at home?
It does. So with outpatient surgery, clear post-op instructions are key.
Got it.
And support.
Hey.
So that might involve home health services or visits from a nurse.
Okay.
But the goal is to make that transition as smooth and safe as possible.
So they're not just kicking you out the door.
No. We want to make sure you're set up for success.
Yeah.
And that you're empowered to be an active participant in your own recovery.
Now let's talk about what a patient can expect during their surgical experience.
Oh, okay.
What are some of those key outcomes we should be striving for?
Okay.
Aside from, you know, not dying.
Right. Well, survival is definitely at the top of the list.
Yeah, good on them.
But beyond that, you should expect respectful and culturally sensitive care.
Okay.
Throughout the entire process, your individual needs and preferences should always be taken into account.
So it's tailored to you.
Yes, like a tailored suit.
Nice.
It should fit you perfectly.
So that sounds like a basic human right.
It absolutely is. Yeah. Another crucial outcome is safety.
Okay.
So the surgical team goes to great lengths to prevent injuries and adverse effects.
Okay.
Whether it's from positioning during the surgery or preventing infections, minimizing exposure to hazards.
So like they're your personal bodyguards in the OR.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so creating a really safe and controlled environment.
That's right.
What else?
Maintaining those vital balances in your body.
Okay.
So we're talking about things like fluid and electrolyte balance, skin integrity, body temperature.
Keeping all the systems running smoothly.
Yes, exactly.
I'm already starting to see how much goes on behind the scenes.
It's a lot.
That people don't really realize.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts.
To keep everything functioning properly.
Yes.
And I'm guessing pain management is a big one too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Effective pain management is a top priority.
Okay.
So you should expect to be involved in developing your pain management plan.
Okay.
That addresses your individual needs and preferences.
So it's not just like a one-size-fits-all approach.
Definitely not.
Hmm.
Okay, good. We want you to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And able to really focus on healing.
Because it's hard to focus on anything when you're in pain.
It really is. Pain can be debilitating.
I've heard some horror stories about post-op pain.
Oh, I'm sure.
So it's good to know that this is being taken seriously.
It's very seriously.
Okay, so what about the mental and emotional side of things?
Okay.
Is that part of the expected outcome too?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not just about the physical healing, but the emotional recovery too.
Okay.
You should be given the information and support to understand the psychological impacts of surgery.
Okay.
Because it can be a very stressful experience.
Of course.
And addressing those emotions is essential for overall well-being.
Mm, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And finally, we have that whole rehabilitation process.
Yes.
It doesn't end when you just wake up from surgery, right?
Not quite.
Good.
You should expect to actively participate in your rehab to regain your strength, your mobility, your independence.
Okay.
So this might involve physical therapy, occupational therapy, or other specialized services.
So it's really all about getting you back to your best self.
That's the goal.
It sounds like such a holistic approach to recovery.
It is.
Addressing every aspect of well-being.
That's what we aim for.
I'm really impressed by this whole process.
Well, that's what we want you to feel confident and supported every step of the way.
Okay, so we've covered different phases of the surgery, types of procedures, and those key outcomes we're aiming for.
Right.
But let's rewind back to the preoperative stage.
Okay.
What kind of prep is involved?
All right.
I'm guessing it's more than just, you know, picking out a stylish hospital gown.
It is a little bit more involved than that.
Okay.
It starts with a thorough health history assessment.
Okay.
Where the nurse gathers information about everything.
Everything.
Pretty much everything.
Okay, like what?
So from your developmental level to your medical history, previous surgeries, allergies, medications, lifestyle habits, support systems, and any sociocultural needs.
Wow. They're not leaving any stone unturned.
Nope. We want the full picture.
Yeah.
It's like building your medical profile from the ground up.
That's a comprehensive list.
It is.
So why is it so important to get all that information?
It's essential to have a complete picture of your health status.
Okay.
So we can identify any potential risks and tailor your care plan accordingly.
Okay.
So this includes a detailed medication history.
Okay.
And I mean everything.
Everything.
Every single thing you're taking.
So prescription drugs, over-the-counter, even herbal supplements.
All of it, because some medications can interact with anesthesia.
Okay.
Or increase the risk of complications during surgery.
So open and honest communication with your healthcare providers is key.
Absolutely no holding back, even if it's embarrassing. The more they know, the better they can care for you.
So don't be shy.
Don't be shy.
Yeah.
Share any concerns you have, even if you think they're minor.
Got it.
It's all about working together.
It's a partnership.
It is a partnership.
Not just blindly following orders.
Exactly. You're part of the team.
Okay.
So speaking of information, common pre-surgical screening tests are usually done.
Okay.
Just to assess your overall health and identify any potential issues.
Got it.
So these might include a chest x-ray, an EKG.
Okay.
To check your heart. A CBC to check your blood cells.
Okay.
a metabolic panel to look at kidney and liver function
Okay.
and a urinalysis.
Wow, it's like a full body tune-up
It is making sure you're in tip-top shape
for the main
in the
event.
main event, exactly.
But what happens if the tests reveal some abnormal findings?
That's when the healthcare team steps in
Okay.
to address those issues before proceeding.
Okay.
So, for instance, abnormal heart rhythms, kidney problems, uncontrolled blood sugar,
Mm-hmm.
those could all impact your surgical outcomes.
Right.
So it's all about minimizing those risks
Makes sense.
and making sure you're in the best possible shape.
So it's a series of checkpoints
It is like a series of
to make
checkpoints.
sure everything is running smoothly.
Exactly, optimizing your health and safety.
Okay, now let's be honest. Surgery can be a pretty anxiety-provoking experience
Oh, absolutely.
for a lot of people.
Definitely.
So how do nurses kind of address those psychological needs of patients who are going through this?
Well, surgery can be stressful,
Yeah.
both physically and emotionally.
Right.
So providing that emotional support is crucial.
Okay.
And it starts with establishing a therapeutic relationship that's built on trust, empathy, and open communication.
Yeah.
So nurses are trained to be active listeners,
Okay.
to validate your feelings, and to address your concerns with compassion and understanding.
So it's about more than just, checking their vitals and moving on.
Absolutely. It's about connecting on a human level.
Like having a hand to hold, metaphorically speaking, or anything.
Exactly. And then preoperative teaching is another important part of addressing those needs. Okay.
So we're giving you a clear picture of what to expect before, during, and after surgery. We'll explain the surgical process,
Okay.
including any sensory alterations you might experience, like feeling cold or hearing unusual sounds.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll also discuss pain management strategies, emphasizing that effective pain control is essential for your recovery.
So, setting those realistic expectations
Yes.
and empowering the patient to really actively participate in their care.
Absolutely no surprises.
Yeah, no surprises.
No surprises.
Okay, so we've covered the emotional and educational aspects of preparation. What about the physical side of things?
Okay.
What specific interventions are there?
Several. Hygiene and skin prep
Okay.
are essential to minimize the risk of infection.
Got it.
So this typically involves showering with antiseptic soap
Okay.
and sometimes removing hair from the surgical site.
So creating that sterile field.
Exactly. No uninvited guests allowed.
We want to reduce the number of microorganisms around the surgical site as much as possible.
Okay.
We might ask you to empty your bowels before surgery,
Okay.
especially for procedures involving the bowel.
Yeah, that makes sense.
In many cases, a urinary catheter might be inserted
Okay.
to manage your urine output during and after surgery.
So they're thinking at every little detail.
We are trying
Yeah,
to
yeah.
minimize discomfort and promote smooth recovery.
And speaking of details, you're right about not eating or drinking before surgery.
Yeah.
Typically, how long do people have to stop eating and drinking before?
Usually you're instructed to stop several hours before,
Okay.
typically around 8 hours for solids
Okay.
and 2 hours for clear liquids.
Okay.
That's to prevent aspiration,
Right.
which is when food or liquid enters your lungs during anesthesia.
Oh, yeah. That's the NPO thing I've seen on medical charts.
Exactly. Nil per os.
Very official.
It means nothing by mouth.
In Latin.
In Latin, we like to keep things fancy
Right.
in the medical world.
And of course, getting a good night's sleep before surgery is always a good idea.
Absolutely. Rest is crucial for reducing stress and promoting healing.
Okay.
We'll do our best to create a calm and quiet environment for you. And sometimes medications might be prescribed to help you relax and sleep.
Oh, nice. Like a little pre-surgery spa day.
Exactly.
All this is making me feel a lot less apprehensive about surgery.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm almost ready to book my appointment.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so we're informed and prepared.
Yes.
Now, before they wheel me into the OR, what's next?
There's one more crucial step.
Okay.
The Joint Commission's Universal Protocol.
Okay, that sounds serious.
It is. What's that all about? It's a safety protocol
Okay.
designed to prevent the unthinkable.
Which is,
Wrong site, wrong procedure, and wrong person surgery.
oh my gosh.
We want to be absolutely sure we're operating on the right person at the right place for the right reason.
Yeah, that's definitely something you want to avoid.
Absolutely. And the Universal Protocol has three key components to ensure that never happens.
Okay, tell me everything.
All right. So first, we verify your identity multiple times before surgery
Okay.
using at least two patient identifiers,
Okay.
like your name and date of birth.
Makes sense.
Then we mark the operative site
Okay.
with a surgical marker just to
Okay.
clearly indicate where the surgery will be performed.
Got it.
And then finally, right before the surgery
All
starts,
right.
The entire surgical team participates in a timeout.
A timeout.
A timeout, like in basketball.
Similar concept, but much higher stakes.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you get a technical foul if you don't participate?
I hope not.
Okay.
So during the timeout, everyone stops.
Okay.
And verbally confirms the patient's identity, the correct surgical site, and the procedure being performed.
So it's that one last check.
One last check.
To make sure that everyone is literally on the same page.
Absolutely.
And to prevent any potential errors.
Yes, we're all about teamwork and communication in the OR. Well, that is incredibly reassuring.
Good.
It makes me feel a lot better knowing that those kinds of safety measures are in place.
Yeah, patient safety is the top priority, and the universal protocol is a critical part of that.
Okay, so we made it through the preoperative phase.
We did.
We did all the safety checks.
Yes.
And now what?
Now the focus shifts to the postoperative period,
okay,
which is all about careful monitoring,
okay,
and preventing complications as you recover from anesthesia and surgery.
Yeah.
And this is where those amazing nurses really shine.
Okay, no party hats yet.
Not yet.
But tell me more about those postoperative nurses.
Okay.
What exactly are they doing to make sure I survive and thrive?
Think of them as your personal recovery squad. They're constantly assessing your vital signs, checking your surgical site, managing pain, and basically making sure you're on the road to recovery.
So they're like human early warning systems.
Exactly.
Always on the lookout for any signs of trouble.
Always on the lookout. They're checking your respiratory rate, rhythm, and depth, making sure you're taking nice, even breaths. They're also listening to your lungs with a stethoscope.
Okay.
Making sure there are no abnormal sounds like wheezing or crackles.
Right.
Which could be red flags. And of course, they're keeping a close eye on those oxygen saturation levels,
mm-hmm,
with a pulse oximeter.
Okay.
That little device that clips onto your finger and measures how much oxygen is in your blood.
Yeah, I've seen those in hospitals. They're pretty amazing.
They are.
It's like they have a window into your inner workings.
They really do. And sometimes they might even monitor your carbon dioxide levels.
Oh, wow.
Which gives them a more complete picture of how well your lungs are functioning.
Oh,
it's all about making sure you're getting enough oxygen and that your lungs are doing their job.
It's incredible how much technology is involved in post-op care.
It is.
But it's not all machines.
No, not at all.
Nurses still use their hands and their ears to assess patients.
Absolutely. They're constantly using their senses and their clinical judgment to make sure you're doing okay. For example, they're regularly checking your blood pressure,
okay,
making sure it's within a healthy range, and they're also monitoring your heart rate and rhythm, either by feeling your pulse or with an electrocardiogram. EKG.
Ah, yes, the EKG, those beeping machines you see in all the medical dramas.
That's right. Those machines are like little detectives tracking your heart's electrical activity and letting the nurses know if there are any irregularities. They're basically listening to your heart's rhythm.
I love that.
Making sure it's beating to the right tune.
So it's like they're conducting a symphony of healing.
Beautifully put.
Making sure that all the instruments are playing in harmony.
I like that.
Okay, so they're checking the lungs, they're checking the heart. What about temperature?
Temperature is important, too. A little fever after surgery might seem normal.
Okay.
But it could be a sign of infection.
Oh.
On the other hand, being too cold, a condition called hypothermia, can also be a problem. It can mess with wound healing and lead to other issues.
So they're constantly striving for that Goldilocks zone.
Exactly.
Not too hot, not too cold.
Not too hot, not too cold.
Right in the middle.
Just right.
Speaking of balance, let's talk about the central nervous system.
Okay.
As you emerge from anesthesia, nurses are carefully monitoring your level of consciousness.
Right.
Making sure you're waking up safely and gradually.
Yes. We don't want you jumping out of bed and doing a victory dance just yet.
So they're checking to see if you're oriented to time, place, and person.
Exactly.
Making sure you know who you are and where you are.
They'll ask you simple questions like your name, where you are, and what day it is.
Right.
And they're also assessing your responsiveness to stimuli.
Yeah.
Can you open your eyes when they speak to you? Can you squeeze their hand? Mm-hmm. These are all indicators that your brain is coming back online properly.
Like they're gently coaxing you back to the land of the living.
That's a great way to put it. They're also checking your pupils, making sure they're the right size and reacting to light appropriately.
Got it.
It's all about making sure your brain is recovering as it should.
Wow, they're so thorough.
We try to be.
It's amazing.
It's a lot to keep track of.
It's like they're checking every system from head to toe.
Head to toe.
What about hydration?
Oh, hydration's super important.
How do they know if you're getting enough fluids after surgery?
Fluid balance is crucial after surgery.
Okay.
So nurses are monitoring your intake and output.
Okay.
Keeping track of how much fluid you're taking in and how much you're putting out.
Okay.
They're also checking your skin turgor.
Skin turgor.
Yeah, it's a fancy way of saying they pinch your skin to see how quickly it bounces back.
Okay, so if your skin stays pinched for a while, it means you're dehydrated.
That's one sign, yes. They're also checking your vital signs because changes in heart rate and blood pressure can also indicate dehydration.
Okay.
And on the flip side, they're watching out for fluid overload,
Fluid overload.
which can happen if you get too much fluid too quickly. This can cause swelling, shortness of breath, or a rapid weight gain.
So it's like walking a tightrope with fluids.
It is a delicate balance.
Too little, you're dehydrated. Too much, you're overloaded.
Exactly.
How do they find that perfect balance?
It's a delicate dance,
Yeah.
and it requires careful monitoring and adjustment.
Okay.
They're constantly assessing your individual needs and adjusting your fluid intake accordingly.
So hydration is a balancing act.
It is.
What about the surgical wound itself?
Okay.
How do nurses make sure it's healing properly?
Wound care is another big part of their job.
Okay.
They're regularly checking your incision,
Yeah.
looking for any signs of infection like redness, swelling, warmth, or drainage.
Okay.
They're also making sure the dressing is clean, dry, and intact.
So they're like the guardians of the wound,
Exactly.
making sure it stays happy and healthy.
We want to keep that wound happy.
Right.
They're also monitoring any tubes or drains that might be in place,
Okay.
making sure they're functioning properly and that there's no blockage or leakage.
Got it.
And of course, they're managing your pain,
Yes.
making sure you're comfortable and able to move around as you heal.
Pain management is so important
It is.
after surgery because it's hard to focus on anything else when you're in pain.
You're absolutely right. Nurses are constantly assessing your pain level and administering medication as prescribed by your doctor.
Okay.
They're also watching out for any side effects from the medication and making adjustments as needed. We want you to be as comfortable as possible so you can focus on healing.
Okay, good. It's good to know they're taking that seriously.
Very seriously.
What about nausea and vomiting?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that's a common side effect.
It is.
Absolutely.
Nausea and vomiting can be caused by anesthesia, pain medication, or even the surgery itself.
Okay.
Nurses are always on the lookout for these symptoms
Okay.
and can provide anti-nausea medication as needed.
Good.
We want to make sure you're not losing fluids and that your recovery is as smooth as possible.
It's amazing how much nurses do to take care of patients after surgery.
It is a lot.
They really are superheroes.
They are a very special breed.
And they're constantly communicating with the doctor, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Keeping them updated on your progress and reporting any concerns.
It's a team effort.
It sounds like they're the quarterbacks of the recovery team,
I like that.
calling the plays and making sure that everyone's working together.
That's a great analogy.
Right.
They're the ones who see the whole picture
Yeah.
and make sure all the pieces are in place.
Okay, so we've covered the basics of post-operative care.
Yes.
Now let's talk about some of the potential complications that can arise.
Okay.
We briefly touched on those cardiovascular issues earlier.
We did.
Can we dive a little deeper into those?
Absolutely. We talked about hemorrhage shock and thrombophlebitis.
Yes.
Those are the big three when it comes to cardiovascular complications.
Okay, let's start with hemorrhage.
Right.
What are the key signs that nurses are watching for?
One of the earliest signs is an increase in heart rate.
Okay.
Think of it as your body sounding the alarm. It's trying to compensate for the blood loss by pumping blood faster.
So it's like your heart is working overtime.
Exactly. But as blood loss continues, the heart can't keep up,
Okay.
and you'll start to see a drop in blood pressure.
So that's when things are getting serious.
That's a sign that things are getting serious.
So the combination of a rapid heart rate and low blood pressure,
Yes.
that's a red flag.
That's a big red flag.
Okay. What are some other signs?
Other signs include restlessness, anxiety, pale and clammy skin, cool and mottled extremities, rapid breathing, and a decrease in urine output. The body is basically trying to conserve blood flow to the vital
Oh,
organs.
it's like a full body response.
That is.
What happens if a hemorrhage is suspected?
It's all hands on deck. The
Okay.
priority is to stop the bleeding and replace blood volume as quickly as possible.
Okay.
This might involve applying pressure to the wound, administering fluids or blood transfusions, or even surgery to repair the source of the bleeding time is of the essence.
So hemorrhage is a very serious situation
It
that
is.
requires immediate action.
Absolutely.
Okay, what about shock?
All right, so shock is a life-threatening condition that occurs when your body isn't getting enough blood flow to the vital organs.
Okay.
This can be caused by severe blood loss, a heart attack, a severe infection, or even a severe allergic reaction.
So it's like your body systems are starting to shut down.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay.
The symptoms of shock vary depending on the type and severity.
Okay.
But common signs include a rapid heart rate, a weak pulse, low blood pressure, pale and clammy skin, rapid breathing confusion, and decreased urine output.
So some of those signs overlap with hemorrhage.
You're right. There is definitely some overlap.
So how can you tell them apart?
That's why it's so important for nurses to assess the patient carefully and consider all possible causes. They're trained to be like detectives piecing together the clues to figure out what's going on.
So what is the treatment for shock?
The treatment depends on the underlying cause.
Okay.
But the overall goals are to improve blood flow, restore oxygen levels, and support organ function. This might involve administering fluids, medications to increase blood pressure, or even surgery.
Got it.
It's a team effort with everyone working together to stabilize the patient.
So it's a complex and challenging condition to manage.
It can be.
But with proper recognition and treatment, most patients can recover.
That's the goal.
That's good.
Most patients do recover fully from shock.
Okay, so we've talked about hemorrhage and shock.
Mm-hmm.
What about thrombophlebitis?
All right, so thrombophlebitis is inflammation of a vein, often caused by a blood clot.
Hey.
It's a concern after surgery because surgery increases the risk of blood clots.
Why is that?
Well, for a few reasons.
Okay.
Surgery can damage blood vessels, it can slow down blood flow, and it increases the levels of clotting factors in the blood.
So it's like surgery creates a perfect storm for blood clots.
It can, yeah. It's definitely something we take very seriously.
That's a little scary.
It is. That's why DVT prevention is such a crucial part of post-operative care.
Can you remind us what DVT is and why it's so dangerous?
DVT, or deep vein thrombosis, is a blood clot that forms in a deep vein, usually in the legs.
Okay.
It's dangerous because the clot can break loose and travel to the lungs, causing a pulmonary embolism.
Oh, wow.
Which is a blockage of an artery in the lungs.
And that's life-threatening.
That can be life-threatening, yes.
Okay, so DVT is definitely something we want to avoid.
Definitely.
What are the signs and symptoms?
The most common symptoms include pain and cramping in the calf, or thigh redness and swelling in the affected area, an elevated temperature, and an increase in the diameter of the involved extremity.
So basically, if your leg starts to swell and hurt, it's time to get checked out.
Yes, exactly. Don't hesitate to report any unusual symptoms to your healthcare provider. Early detection is key when it comes to DVT.
Got it. So any unusual leg pain after surgery should be reported to the doctor right away.
Absolutely.
Okay, how is DVT treated?
The treatment typically involves medications to thin the blood and prevent the clot from getting bigger or breaking off.
Okay.
These medications might be given intravenously or orally. In some cases, a filter might be placed in a large vein to catch any clots that break loose.
Oh, wow.
It's like setting up a safety net in your blood vessels.
So it seems like medical science has come a long way.
It has.
In treating blood clots.
It really has, and we're constantly developing new and better ways to prevent and treat DVT.
That's good to hear.
But prevention is always the best medicine. That's why nurses encourage patients to get up and moving as soon as possible after surgery.
Okay.
Moving those legs helps keep the blood flowing and prevents clots from forming.
So it's like a post-surgery workout.
You could say that they're always encouraging patients to get moving and take an active role in their recovery.
It's a partnership. We've established that.
It is a partnership.
Okay, so we've covered the cardiovascular complications.
Yes.
What about respiratory issues?
Okay.
Let's start with pulmonary embolism.
All right.
What are those signs and symptoms nurses are looking for?
The signs and symptoms of a pulmonary embolism can vary depending on the size of the clot and where it lodges in the lungs. It can be a bit of a chameleon, making it tricky to diagnose.
Uh-huh.
But some common signs and symptoms include sudden shortness of breath, chest pain, a cough that may produce blood, a rapid heart rate, a bluish tinge to the skin, and anxiety.
So it's a combination of respiratory and cardiovascular symptoms.
Exactly. The clot is affecting both the lungs and the heart.
It sounds like a double whammy.
It is a serious situation that requires immediate medical attention.
What is the treatment for a pulmonary embolism?
The treatment typically involves medications to thin the blood and break up the clot.
Okay.
As well as supplemental oxygen to improve breathing.
Okay.
In some cases, a procedure might be done to remove the clot.
Okay.
It's all about restoring blood flow to the lungs and getting those oxygen levels back up.
So pulmonary embolism is a medical emergency.
It is.
That requires aggressive treatment.
Absolutely.
Now let's talk about atelectasis.
Okay.
Can you remind us what that is?
Atelectasis is a condition where the tiny air sacs in the lungs, called alveoli, collapse, preventing oxygen from getting into the bloodstream. It's like a part of the lung deflates,
okay,
which can cause all sorts of problems.
What are the signs and symptoms of atelectasis?
Patients with atelectasis might have decreased breath sounds over the affected area, shortness of breath, a bluish tinge to their skin crackles or rattling sounds when they breathe, restlessness and anxiety.
Okay.
It can be pretty distressing, but the good news is it's often preventable.
Okay.
With proper postoperative care and patient education.
So it's all about getting those lungs working properly again.
Exactly.
What's the treatment for atelectasis?
The treatment focuses on re-expanding the collapsed lung tissue.
Okay.
This might involve encouraging deep breathing exercises using an incentive spirometer.
Okay.
That's a device that helps you take deep breaths, suctioning out mucus, adding supplemental oxygen, and managing pain to allow for deeper breaths.
So it's a multi-pronged approach.
It is.
It sounds like a lot of work.
It can be,
yeah.
But it's often much easier to prevent atelectasis than it is to treat it. That's why nurses are so diligent about encouraging patients to cough, deep breathe, and use that incentive spirometer.
Right.
Those simple actions can make a world of difference.
So we've talked about pulmonary embolism and atelectasis. What about pneumonia?
Okay, pneumonia is an infection of the lungs that can cause a variety of symptoms, including fever chills, a cough that produces phlegm, chest pain, shortness of breath, rapid breathing, and fatigue. It can feel like a really bad chest cold.
Okay.
But it's much more serious than that.
Right.
What's the treatment for pneumonia?
Yeah, what's the treatment?
The treatment typically involves antibiotics to kill the bacteria causing the infection.
Okay.
As well as supportive care to manage symptoms and improve breathing. This might include oxygen therapy, 4D fluids, and medications to reduce fever and pain. It's all about supporting the body's natural defenses and helping those lungs heal.
So it sounds like a serious condition.
It is.
That requires prompt medical attention.
It does. Early detection and treatment are key to preventing complications and ensuring a full recovery.
I'm starting to realize just how many potential complications there are
after
surgery.
There are a few.
It's a little overwhelming, to be honest.
It can be, but remember, these complications are relatively rare, and nurses are highly trained to recognize and address them quickly.
Okay.
They're like watchdogs, always on the lookout for any signs of trouble.
That's reassuring, but is there anything patients can do to kind of help prevent these respiratory problems?
Absolutely. There's a helpful mnemonic to remember the key steps.
Okay.
I-Q-O-F.
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 That sounds more like a symptom than a solution.
I know it's a bit counterintuitive, but trust me, it works.
All right.
I stands for incentive spirometry, that handy little device that helps you take deep breaths and expand your lungs.
Right.
C is for coughing and deep breathing exercises, which help clear mucus and prevent atelectasis.
Okay.
O is for oral care, which is important for removing bacteria from the mouth and preventing pneumonia.
Got it.
U is for understanding, emphasizing the importance of patient and staff education.
Okay, so far so good. I'm starting to see how it all ties together.
Good G is for getting out of bed and moving around as soon as you're able.
Mm.
And H is for head of bed elevation, which helps improve lung expansion.
Okay, that's a lot to remember, but it makes sense.
It does.
It's all about those proactive measures to keep the lungs healthy.
That's right.
And prevent those complications.
Exactly. And nurses play a vital role in educating patients about these preventative measures and encouraging them to participate actively in their recovery. It's a team effort all the way.
So even though there are risks associated with surgery,
yes,
there are also a lot of things that can be done to minimize those risks.
Absolutely.
And promote a smooth recovery.
Exactly. Knowledge is power. And by being informed and proactive, you can significantly improve your chances of a successful surgical outcome.
Wow. It's amazing how much goes into perioperative care. It seems like nurses are juggling a million things at once, monitoring vitals, managing pain, preventing complications, educating patients, and probably a whole lot more that we didn't even cover.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's a highly demanding role, requires a unique blend of knowledge, skill, compassion, and stamina. Perioperative nurses are truly the unsung heroes of the surgical world.
I'm so glad we took this deep dive into their world. It's given me a whole new appreciation for what they do.
Me too.
So let's do a quick recap for our listeners. We started by exploring the three phases of perioperative care, pre-op, intra-op, and post-op. Each phase has its own set of tasks and challenges, but nurses are there every step of the way guiding patients through the journey.
Right. We talked about the different types of surgeries from elective to emergency minor to major and everything in between. We even delved into the world of anesthesia, exploring the different types and how they work to keep patients comfortable and safe during surgery.
And who could forget that catchy mnemonic for preventing respiratory complications? I-C-O-F.
Yeah.
Incentive spirometry, coughing, oral care, understanding getting out of bed, and head of bed elevation. It's like a post-surgery survival guide.
That's right.
We also talked about the importance of informed consent. It's not just about signing a form. It's about making sure patients understand the risks and benefits of surgery and are actively involved in the decision-making process. And we touched on advanced directives, which allow patients to specify their healthcare wishes in case they're unable to communicate them.
It's all about patient autonomy.
Absolutely. Then we went back in time to the preoperative phase, where nurses gather a comprehensive health history review medications and make sure patients are physically and emotionally prepared for surgery.
We want to make sure everyone is ready for the big day.
Exactly. And of course, we couldn't forget about the potential complications that can arise after surgery. We talked about cardiovascular issues like hemorrhage shock and thrombophlebitis, as well as respiratory problems like pulmonary embolism, atelectasis, and pneumonia.
It can sound a little scary.
It can.
But it's important to remember that these complications are relatively rare.
Yeah.
And perioperative nurses are highly skilled at recognizing the early warning signs and taking prompt action to prevent things from escalating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're always on the lookout for any signs of trouble.
Always.
And they're ready to intervene at a moment's notice.
They are truly the guardians of patient safety.
Okay, so before we wrap up, I have to ask, what's the most surprising or memorable thing you've learned during this deep dive?
You know, it's not just one specific thing. It's the whole interconnectedness of it all, how every decision, every action, every detail, no matter how small, can have a ripple effect on the patient's outcome. It's a constant reminder that we're dealing with real people's lives here, and there's no room for complacency.
Wow, that's powerful. And it makes me appreciate even more the dedication and expertise of perioperative nurses.
They are amazing.
Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into the world of perioperative nursing. A huge thank you to our expert guest for sharing their incredible insights and for all the amazing work that nurses do every day to keep surgical patients safe and healthy.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this fascinating journey. We hope you learned something new and that you'll come back for more deep dives in the future. Until next time, stay curious and keep learning.